Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Josh Watt, 6 years of combination experience, an engineer with Converse Fire Department in Texas on Ladder 172. Josh never wanted to be a firefighter. He was approached by a few who asked a couple of questions which he responded no to, but as they kept prying, they found one that intrigued him and got Josh to say yes to. The definition of opportunity is a set of circumstances that makes it possible to do something. Those circumstances within Josh's life has got him to where he is today, and I truly want the listeners to hear some great truth bombs on various topics Josh and I discussed. Being the best version of yourself is great, but for Josh, he wants to make sure first and foremost that he is a great father and husband to his family. With that, I present Josh Watt.
Well, my name is Josh Watt. Currently working down in Converse, Texas. I've been a firefighter there specifically for 3 years, but I've been in the fire service for six. 1 year as a volunteer and then five as career. I'm married, happily married, been married for 10 full years. We're in our 11th year now. We've got three boys, one baby boy, he's brand new, and two other boys that are 8 and 6. My wife is awesome. She's my foundation to the fire service for me. Just living life, working for a smaller department, Converse Fire.
Okay. All right. Did you always know that the fire service was your calling, or is that something you fell into?
No, I did not know. It's actually pretty funny. I think with me looking back, I did not want to be a firefighter. I was in the Army. I got out of the Army and I was actually welding at the time. And we were at this little park in West Virginia where we were living, and the volunteer company was doing a boot drive. There was this nice little amphitheater that the park had just put in. And they were walking around at the show just like, hey, donations, we'll do half the boot. It's like a 50-50, right? So you put in money and you get a raffle ticket, and then they'll split the boot with you. So I donated because I thought it was cool. I'm glad there's firefighters, but I had no interest. And they were like, well, do you want to? I was like, no, firefighters are dumb, like, in my opinion. At the time, I was like, they don't know. Dude, it's... What do you got to do? You spray water. I haven't seen a house fire ever in my life. So you guys aren't doing anything. And they're like, okay, well, that's fine. Well, what about EMS? You could be an EMT. And I was like, absolutely not. I hate medicine. I hated it with a passion. I had to do some of it in the Army, and I just hated it. I just didn't like it at all. And they're like, okay. And then they asked me the one question that got me. They're like, well, we've got a river team. I was like, oh, so like divers. And they're like, yeah, which was a lie. But yeah, I was like, okay, I'll come check it out. So went in and they were like, well, before we get to the river stuff, we got to see if you could put bunker gear on. So I did. And it was really easy. I did exactly what they told me to do. And I went exactly where they told me to go. And yeah, they were like, sweet, you did great. We went to go fill up the engine tanker at the one hydrant in the county. And they were like, well, we got this call that's popping off. Really rural area. So at the time, there was only one EMT on shift in the county. All the other houses were staffed by volunteers. And usually it was like what we have in Texas as an ECA or like a driver only. So They've got first aid, CPR. They can drive the ambulance to meet the EMT, and then the paramedics coming in a chase car. Anyway, so we happened to have a paramedic with us on the engine, just volunteering. So we're like, "Yeah, we'll make He was like, "Yeah, we'll make up the medic. We'll go assist them." So we ran lights and sirens in an old engine tanker. You know, the nice queue. I was sitting backwards, rolling in the dark, and I was like, oh man, my 5-year-old came out. Lights and sirens, big red truck, big loud horn. And I started talking to him. I was like, well, can I do this for a living? And they were like, yeah, you got to go through all these things. So I ended up getting hired on it at Martinsburg. Martinsburg, West Virginia is my first career department, and fell in love with it.
Okay. That's an awesome story how you're like, no, I don't want to do that. No, I don't want to do this. And then look what happens at the end. But that's awesome. Okay. All right. So my next question is West Virginia to Texas. How'd
Yeah.
that come about?
So I was in the army and I got out. I met my wife in the army, and excuse me, she was stationed in Maryland. I can't do Maryland laws. So we lived in West Virginia, and then she got orders to drill sergeant school. And so she became a drill sergeant in the army, and they stationed her here at Fort Sam Houston because she's in the medical field. So she became a drill sergeant at Fort Sam, and I of course went with her, and we moved because the army moved her.
Okay. All right. Now, was it difficult to find a department to get on, or was that like the first thing you wanted to do as soon as you got to Texas?
So yes, and also yes. No one that I knew nobody here when I came down to Texas, and Texas is a different ball game than West Virginia. So West Virginia, you don't need fire two or anything. You can get your fire one, and hazmat operations and awareness, and you can operate as a full-fledged firefighter. Thankfully, I got my IFSAC certifications for fire one and fire two. If I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have been able to get hired on. But nobody told me this. Also in Texas, there's this thing called FIDO, which are like TCFP, which is the Texas Commission of Fire Protection. And you have to have a FIDO account, and you have to get all your things paid for, and it's this complex thing. Well, so I came down here for like 6 months and had no idea that I needed a FIDO account. I was like, I got my IFSAC certs, I'm good, right? Because that's what they tell you when you take them. It took me about 6 months. I worked private ambulance, which was horrible. And Converse put out a hiring thing. I lived in Converse at the time. And so I applied. I had all my certs. I sent them all my IFSAC stuff. And the chief calls me about 12 minutes later. And Fire Chief Valdez, he was like, hey, man, I like your application. You're already certified. You're in paramedic school. But you don't have a FIDO. And I was like, yeah, chief, I don't know what a FIDO is. So he actually helped me out. He told me what steps to do. He's like, pull your application. I can't even have you in there until you get your FIDO stuff, but it doesn't take very long. So call this number, call that number, and then set up your stuff and reapply. So he did me a solid. I was able to get my application back in there. So if you don't know about Texas and you're coming here, it's challenging. The nice thing about Texas compared to West Virginia is the percentage of volunteer to career, especially in like the more developed areas of Texas, is opposite of West Virginia. West Virginia, there's very few career departments. There's a lot of volunteers. Here, there's a lot of career departments and very few volunteers. So if you're looking to get paid as a firefighter, it's a good spot to come down to.
Okay. And if you can explain, you're saying FIDO, like FIDO. And what exactly is that?
So my basic understanding of it is it's similar to like National Registry for EMS, right?
Okay.
It's like the
Okay.
governing body of Texas that you go take your class, and we'll say fire one, fire two, although they combine it in Texas. So that's a bad example, but instructor one. You go get your instructor one, you take the class, it's like a 40-hour class or whatever. You take your state test, you do all this stuff, and then you go to FIDO and you submit like, hey, I completed this class, I completed this thing, here's my completion, and then they review it, and then you pay for your cert, and they basically hold your certification. It's kind of like the cops too. They have like a commission, and the city holds their commission, except it's a
Okay.
statewide thing.
Okay. All right, gotcha. All right. So, I mean, definitely you said the chief did you a solid when she did, because a lot of chiefs could have just been like, oh, Josh Watts application. All right, cool. Yeah, he doesn't have this next and never said a word, and you're just waiting, like, what's going on? So definitely that's a solid move right there. That's awesome. So upon once you got that good, you're registered, you're in the system, you get hired. Did you have to do some sort of academy or abbreviated school or anything of that?
No, so Converse doesn't do that. We hire one of two types of candidates now. It's either you're a paramedic only, or you're a firefighter paramedic. We're 100% ALS. Because of that requirement, we don't hold an academy. So you're already certified coming to us as a paramedic, at least as a paramedic. And then if you're a firefighter, we have a probationary period, and we have a fairly decent probationary program that we put them through. They have a probie book. We assign them to a senior guy, and their senior guy is the guy that's responsible for walking them through the probie book, and then the officer ultimately is, of course, responsible for signing them off. But you have a whole year when you get your fire. If you come in as a firefighter, you have a whole year to go through your probie book, make sure you're doing it, doing things the way that we like to see them done. Like any department, you can come in 13 years on the job, and I respect that you've got 13 years on the job. It's awesome. You've got some valuable experience. You come to us and, hey man, look, this is how we're doing it. I know that you've been here doing things for a long time, but so you can keep up with us, this is what we're doing, so that you pull a line the same way, you search the same way, and we kind of we mold people in. But no academy, thankfully for me. I don't like I want to be careful with this, but like I don't necessarily love going to, I've never been to a fire academy. But talking to guys and stuff like that, like I'm sure it would be different if I were to go through it. I just have a, that was the one thing about the army that I absolutely despised was basic. And it's like, man, I don't know. I don't know if I would love to do that, but yeah, no academy for Converse.
And can you explain to us a little bit about Commerce? How many stations, personnel, things of that nature? It doesn't have to be like exact numbers.
Sure. Right now we're two houses. We've got engine or station 173, station 172. We've got an engine and a box at station 173, and then we've got a ladder company and a box, and then like a squad response vehicle for the county. So what we're, I think we're at 14 a shift. We have three shifts. So was that like 40 something people? 50 right there. Yeah, we work a 4896. We're all paramedics. We've got engineer rank, lieutenant, captain, and then firefighter, or paramedic. We don't have any EMTs anymore. And right now we're averaging, and this year we're on track for 6,500 calls this year out of the two houses, which is popping for us. Yeah.
And did you guys have any sort of mutual aid response agreements, things like that?
Yeah, actually we have a lot of mutual aid. So we run mutual aid with everyone that touches our border. So we're surrounded by Schertz, Live Oak, Universal City, ESD 10, ESD 11, ESD 12. Our first alarm is, oh, and Windcrest. Our first alarm pulls in our city, pulls a unit from Live Oak, Universal City, ESD 10, Schertz, and then the RAND office and Air Force Base. That will pull a unit from all of those, and then a county medic unit as well. And then we respond to first due boxes if for all of those departments as well. So if they catch a fire in their area, we also send a unit to them. ESD 12 pulls 173. ESD 11, depending on where it is in ESD 11, we'll pull the engine from 173. So it just depends. For our mutual aid, we send the closest unit, so that our guys can get there faster, unless they specifically request, like if ESD 12 specifically requests the ladder truck, then the ladder's going to go. But most of the time, if they just are calling for manpower, we're going to send them the closest.
All right. So once you got your feet wet with Converse, did you try to find those firefighters you wanted to emulate? Because you mentioned how if you're new coming in, they're going to teach you the way Converse does it. So was that a challenge for you, or did you try to seek out those individuals?
That's an awesome question. One, I'm a little bit of a basket case, I think is the best way to say this. I would love to, if you ever want to talk to a guy who is the saving grace in my world, for my job and just and mentorship, it's my captain, Matt Bryan. I came in kind of before we started doing the senior guy to the junior guy thing. Not in a bad way, just it wasn't really super formalized yet. And the guy that I really tried to emulate, he ended up leaving, coming to work where I live, Cibolo. And his name's Michael Lugo. He's a really good dude. He was very knowledgeable. Arguably the he knew, I mean, every single bolt, every single screw on the ladder. He helped spec the truck, and we didn't have a really good relationship. Mostly due to my fault, right? I came in. I had a couple of years at a different department, right? I was a young guy, and I had something to prove, I think, because I'm coming in, and yeah, I just wasn't. I didn't have a filter. I didn't have the ability to talk to people and to relate. Like, hey, man, it's okay to talk to someone like a normal person. And so I was pretty abrasive, and Lugo also was pretty abrasive at the time, and so we clashed pretty hard. So it was pretty hard for about the first, I don't know, 8, 9 months, where I was like questioning if I was still going to keep my job because I just couldn't keep my mouth shut. Or it's not that I was wrong necessarily with what I was saying; it was the way that I was saying it and the and when I was saying it, and in front of who I was saying it to. And so I would call Captain Brian regularly because it's like, hey man, I'm dealing with this and I don't know how to say this the right way. Can you help me out with this? I don't want to go down this road again. And he would talk to me and he'd be like, most of the time it was like, look, dude, you just got to calm down and figure it out. But there were several other instances where he use his leadership skill and was just like, well, let's walk down this path. Let's explore this, unpack it. And he was able to teach me how to, be a decent guy, and saved my job, I think. And then I started leaning into him pretty hard. He helped me get onto MV Fire Rescue for to teach on the side. And then that just made it like his and my relationship was really tight. Obviously, it was pretty distanced because he was an officer, I was a fire guy, a backseater. And then the promotion, I got promoted to engineer, and I'm his engineer, and so now like we're super tight, and I really leaned into his experience, and his teaching style is perfect for me.
For as long as you've been in the service, I'm sure we all know an individual that is like how you used to be, right? So, what's your advice on anybody listening that's like, damn, that kind of fits my profile? Like, I do that now.
I would, it's you can easily say it as like take a slice of humble pie, but the problem is I thought I was a humble guy, right?
Right.
Because like I'm not bragging about, oh, I've seen this much or I've done this. No. Taking a humble pie, yeah, that's great. But if you already feel like you're a humble dude, sometimes it's okay to not say anything, and it's okay to turn your face off. I'm a horrible poker player, right? Because I can't lie with my face at all. Sometimes it's better to, rather than just absolutely demolish that wrong, the thing that is perceived to be wrong, rather than just crush it. It's okay to be like, let them say it, let them do it, and then on the side, approach them and be like, hey man, you were saying this, and I'd like to know more about it, right? I want to understand why you're saying what you're saying first. Because if it's as simple as a I made a clerical error in what I was saying, right? If I'm quoting a percentage to you and I'm like, yeah, it's 25% of the time. Well, the real answer is 50% of the time. Well, if I come up to you and I just demolish you, right? Well, now we're gonna have beef over. I didn't, dude, it slipped my mind. You know how many percentages we have to remember? But if I pull you to the side later, 5 minutes, whatever, and just be like, hey man, are you sure? What was going on? I know you said you were talking about these percentages. Isn't it? I thought it was like 50%. 9 times out of 10, I've found that one, you coming to them is like you're looking for more information from them. So their guard's going to be down. You're coming from a place of love. And then it gives them the opportunity to correct themselves without having to be like, yeah, you were wrong. They're like, oh, yeah, it was 50%. Yeah, you're right. I must have just slipped my mind, or I was thinking about this, or it's kind of like giving them an out, right? And that de-escalation has saved me from very, very difficult conversations turning bad, like the HR nightmares, right? HR nightmares are just hard conversations that went poorly. And it gets to the HR. If you can nix it and like just cancel out the emotions to where they don't get too high, and you can keep that conversation, even if it's a difficult conversation, in that cool space where you can think with an open mind, I can listen with open ears, then we're good. We can do anything.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. And two, like you mentioned earlier, your delivery and tone on certain things, it all that plays a huge factor. But I love the fact that you were able to find that, and he may not know it until now, but essentially your captain that you have now that you're driving for, he was your mentor in a way.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm sure he does know because, I mean, he and I talk every single day. 90% of it's about work, ironically. That's kind of like our safe haven with each other is. He's got his personal life. I've got my personal life, and I know his kid. I know his wife and stuff. But we connect really well with the job. And so our safe space is like going and looking at some videos, going and looking at some things, sharing it with each other, talking it through. There, like for example, there was a video that I saw yesterday. Very unfortunate situation. Don't know what happened, right? It was the New York ladder, the ladder that looked like it failed. Well, I've never had that happen, like not like that. So we talked about it for about an hour and came up with our own thing, and we'll see what the report says. But yeah, and multiple times it's been, he knows I've told him like, you're my guy. You're the guy that I want to be like someday. His attitude, yes, he's a captain, but it's hard to like, well, I don't care. It's talking about him, so it's still totally okay. Very humble, and I mean that in the truest sense. He's a genuine leader. If we succeed, it wasn't his idea. It was the team. The crew succeeded. He didn't succeed. It was the guys. The guys did all the work. If they failed, that wasn't the guys' fault. I didn't lead them properly. They didn't fail. They were doing their best. They were working. I happened to make a misstep or a miscalculation, and that's why their results didn't meet what was the expectation. So very much a give the credit to the guys, take the downfall for himself. Very selfless guy. And yeah, I love him, and I'm super blessed to be working under him.
Awesome. Okay. So you're now an engineer. So my question to you is, what triggered you to decide to move up and why?
That's an excellent question too. Man, you got all the good questions. I love it. Well, I was a die hard, I'm gonna be backseat, sitting backwards, riding backwards for the rest of my life, the rest of my career. Hard. All the way until probably halfway through the promotion process. I was still like, I don't want this. Like It's cool, the opportunity, but I was like, man, sitting backwards is where it's at. I mean, you do all the work, you get to go inside, you get to be on the roof, you get to do whatever. Anything that happens, it's you. And I guess it's a maybe a controversial take, I don't know. The thought process for me was, okay, who do I want to be my engineer? Who do I trust enough to know enough or to be willing to learn enough? Those are the same to me. To lead me and lead the guys on my crew that I'm going to be sitting backwards with well enough that I can safely put my life, mostly my family's life, in their hands. Like, who's that guy? And there are definitely a couple guys that got promoted that I was like, yep, I like them a lot. And this is no, there's no bad talking to anybody. Everybody that got promoted earned it. They did awesome. I respect it. But there were a couple people who was like, man, there are some things that I don't agree with them. And I really want this place to be successful. So I'm just gonna try. I'm gonna try. And if I get it, then maybe I can help them grow to be where we both get along and we both agree on the same things. And we might not, but at least I can give that to them. And then when the next promotion comes up, dude, anybody would be like, hands down, yes, that's an excellent engineer when they promote. So that was my main motivation was, if not me, then who? And once that clicked, yeah, I put everything I had into the promotion process. I mean, we had a short amount of time for turnaround. We're the first engineers that got promoted for Converse, and we had 2 weeks to study the two books. We had two books in the process. It was like 800 and something pages of text in 2 weeks. And my buddy Vinny and I, we put like 120 hours on those books, I think, in the 2 weeks. Just drilling, drilling, drilling. So, yeah, the biggest thing was, if it's not, who do I trust enough to have the work ethic to put in the hours to learn the things that they don't know, and then to identify the things that they don't know that they don't know, and learn that. And I looked around and I was like, man, there's not a lot of people that I believe will fully commit to that at the level that I want to. And so I put my name in the mix, and I worked for it, and here we are.
It's definitely not that controversial because I find that's the situation I'm in now. So I've been on my department. I'm going on year. Crap. 18? July would be 18. 18
Okay.
years. So I didn't promote to it's titled senior firefighter, but you're a relief driver in a sense. I didn't promote till year 16. And why? Because there were some times where we didn't have a driver, and it was like, hey, you're checked off, just move up and drive. And I did that quite often, honestly, and I was fine. And then someone was like, hey, man, why don't you go for that next step? Because it's a pay bump. And in my eyes, honestly, I was like, I don't really care about the pay. Like, I'll do it because I love being in the back, but I also like operating the trucks that I'm driving, whether it's an engine or a ladder. And so I took the advice and I did it. And, I was like, all right, I'm good here. But now, there are certain people, and like you said, they are good humans. I believe if you're, you do have your sketchy people every once in a while that find their way into this field where, they're using the title and the rank for their personal gain. I'll say that. But there are good dudes that get promoted, but then when they get promoted, it's what are they doing with that promotion? And you have some that they get promoted, and it's like, all right, cool. I have the title, I get the pay bump, but they're not doing anything to make themselves better or anybody around them better. And so, sitting back now, I'm looking at individuals that it's like, cool, you have this title, you've earned this rank, but you're not doing shit about it. And now that's starting to bother me. It's starting to bother me like a lot. So here recently, I took the lieutenant's test. Our engineers are lieutenants, but they reclassified it because when the cap is off, the driver slides over to ride the seat, which that's a whole other conversation for me because I don't really want to do it. But if I want that role, then I guess I got to do that. So, but anyways, I took the test and I passed it. I was like, oh, cool. Unfortunately, pretty sure there's gonna be no positions available. So I'm gonna have to retake the test again next year, which is not, it's fine. It's fine because I took the time and I studied. So I should, God willingly, pass again. And hopefully there will be some positions coming up because we have another station in the works. But I love your, and I understand what you're trying to say. Like there's no shade, there's no ill will. But if this individual is listening to this, you get promoted. What are you doing to make yourself and those around you better? And that's the problem I see the fire service at. We tell people promote, promote, promote. And yes, when you promote, money is a factor. You get some more money, which is cool because I mean, hell, shit's expensive these days, so I get it. Like everybody wants more money in their pocket. But if you're not doing anything to get the people underneath you, the people around you, your crew better, then what are you really doing?
And also to touch on that too, like intent or perceived intent to me is important. And I there if I'm being if we're being honest and really analyzing this, yes, there is a part of me that does get advanced certifications and does get this because it makes me better. That is true, but I look at the certifications that I've got and the things that I've taken and the classes that I've gone to. They don't really make me better unless I share them, and I wouldn't do them if I'm being really honest here. I don't care enough about going to go get these like instructor two, officer two, incident safety officer. I don't care about that. If I didn't want to take care of my guys better, I would never go. It's money that I could spend on something with my kids. So the intent of going to these classes, yes, it does make me more promotable and it does make me a better firefighter. I can understand a little bit more. But really the true intent is I want my guys to be better. If I take this class and officer one and officer two is kind of a bad example because they don't really teach you anything. But you know, teaching going to do a search class or a ladders class or you know, event class, going and taking those, I'm not there because I want to look cool and be awesome. Like, yes, I want to be awesome, but the reason I want to be awesome is because I want the guy sitting next to me or the guy sitting behind me to look at me and be like, that guy knows what he's talking about. I need him to share what he knows with me. And I also want my guys to go even a step further. And I don't want them to think I want him to share that with me. I want them to be like, yo, this guy needs to slow down with what he's sharing with me. Because that's my job. You promote, you lose yourself. As soon as you backseat fireman's awesome, right? You worry about you. You worry about the guy next to you. You worry about your officer because he's inside with you most of the time. And that's it. That's great. It's a perfect place to be in for a lot of people. The problem is when you get to be a senior fireman, so you're the senior guy on that crew. For us, we don't have like a senior designated. So if you're the senior guy on that crew, you still worry about yourself. You still worry about your guy next to you. But now you have a little more weight on your shoulders because now you really are developing this junior guy. So it's not official, but you asked for it. So now you get to shape his career. Well, as soon as you promote, that like leniency in my mind, at least the leniency of dude, I just wasn't feeling it today, you know, whatever, that's gone. Sorry, man. Tough. It's literally your job to develop these guys to replace you someday. And even if they don't want to replace you, it's your job to make sure that they could replace you if they have to, right? You lose your ability to be selfish when you promote because it's not about you anymore. The reason there's a rank there is because you have to be taking care of the guys below you. That there's no other option in my mind.
I mean, I 100% agree, but unfortunately, you know, we have individuals that that's not how they think, and they're all over. Doesn't matter, one station, 55 stations. There are individuals that are gonna get promoted. What I call they fall through the cracks. They play the game to show, yes, they hit these check boxes, these check marks, benchmarks, whatever you want to call it. And then once they get in that position, they are done. They do nothing to develop themselves and their crews. But that's for another topic. Okay, but I love your answer on that 100%. So my next question for you is, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Oh, it's a catchphrase, you know? It's a shiny word. It's like brotherhood.
Yes.
So aggression is great. Aggression is default, but aggression has a cost. So, and this is not me. I tell a lot of what I'm saying is things that I've learned from guys much better than me. So aggression is what the citizens want. Aggression is the guy who's committed to his job, the guy who goes and is able to do his job correctly. He's willing to take a little more personal risk. But the cost of aggression is intelligence. If you are aggressive and if you are super, super aggressive and you're not intelligent, you're reckless. If you're very, very intelligent and you have no balls, you're useless to me on a fire scene, because you can be, you dude, if you're the most intelligent guy, you look at that window, that smoke, and you're like, well, yeah, the fire's over here on this corner in this floor, and there's like three people over in this room because I see the way this tufts, and like, but you're not willing to go in there and do it. I don't need you. But if you're the guy that see, you know, there's fire in every single space of this room. It is not tenable space. You cannot occupy that space as a firefighter without immediately grievous bodily injury. And you jump in, like, yeah, dude, you're super aggressive, but like, you're reckless, man. You gotta be smart. You gotta be both. To me, aggression is not just defined by one simple act. It's defined by your lifestyle. You can't be aggressive unless you're constantly seeking to improve your knowledge base. You're constantly seeking to improve your fitness. You're constantly seeking to improve your mind, right? Like, go out and get training. I have the benefit of coming from a different part of the country where fire is ran a completely different way before I came to Texas. Texas does fire in Texas very good. The problem is that sometimes things happen. Like a couple of few years ago, where they burnt down an entire apartment complex because they had frozen hydrants. That doesn't happen in Texas. But you know where they have frozen hydrants all the time? West Virginia, New York, anywhere that's up cold, right? So if you keep yourself in the bubble, you can't be aggressive because not entirely, because you don't have the knowledge base to go outside of your comfort zone. So to me, aggression is it's a way of life. You have to be a constant, you have to be constantly committed to improving every aspect of your job, of your life. And then one note that I don't think ever gets touched on when I hear people talk about aggression is you have to be mentally healthy. Because your brain can only do one task 100% of the time. So if you're at 100% and you're at what, 90%, right? You get into a fight with your wife, or you had a bad call and you're tripping over it and you're just not there. And then it happens. The career fire happens, which is like everyone's like, it never happens, but it always does. Someone always goes through their career fire. So if you're 90% occupied, you and the missus got into an argument and y'all are thinking about whatever, or it doesn't matter what it is, right? If you're not mentally ready, you're not mentally prepared, you're not mentally healthy, and then you're expected to go perform at 100% in a very demanding situation, you're going to fail. And you can't be aggressive, because if you're not able to think about what's going on, then you don't have the bandwidth to go in there and take that little more risk to yourself, because man, I didn't even factor that in, because I was on the way there, I was thinking about something else. Long-winded explanation there, sorry, but
No, you're good.
encapsulated, that's aggression to me.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And definitely the point of your the whole mental capacity, the mindset, Think about how many times we know that we have personally or a friend has personally gone to work and they are checked out. Like they are not there. They shouldn't be there, but we roll the dice and we don't get that call. And so they skate through. They skate through the shift, whether it's 24 or 48s, and it's like, all right, we're good. But one of these days, you're not going to be with it, and those tones are going to drop. And then it's like, all right, it's time to go. So I get it, and I understand 100. Like for me, when I go to do my 48s, it's like, all right, 48, I'm all in. Between the hours of 8 and 5, I am either reading NIOSH reports, I'm watching videos, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing some sort of physical training. And I understand not everybody does that, but for me, at least, if you're a career fireman and you show up to work, me and my buddy, we kind of joke about this, but at least it's what we call be a firefighter between the hours of 8 and 5, at least. Like, go do some fireman shit. Go put on your gear. Talk about a piece of equipment. Go look at buildings and how we would do that. Like, between the hours of 8 and 5, actually be a firefighter. After 5 o'clock, man, it's downtime. Go do whatever you got to do. I'm no better than anybody else, but I do that after 5, man. I have my category of shows that I watch. I'm not, trying to front about it or like it's okay to have other things besides fire, but at least during the day, go out and do something to better yourself. At least an hour a day.
Oh yeah. We on that, we do something similar. We have our list, so our chief approved version of the list is called our list for success. But we're a bunch of firemen, so we know that's not what we call it. It's our fuck list. And the reason it's called the fuck list is because if you did it, man, you fucked that tour. You fucked that tour up, right? And it's three. It's all self-paced, self motivated, right? Self-driven. So you've got workout, read, and train. Now, if we go out and we go do RIT training for a couple hours as a crew, guess what, man? Every person on that crew can sign the whiteboard. Like, that's training. If for some reason, most of the time it's calls. If call volume is too high to where like we can't get a full company or the medic and the truck, we can't work together on a training, that's okay. That's all right. But go out there and train. Go do something in gear. Go, doesn't have to be in fireside every single time because we do run EMS too, right? Go learn about the ventilator or what's this pump thing, right? I will say my shift is very, very good at the impromptu training, right? So go train, work out. Hey, if guys want to get in the gear workout as a crew, awesome. I love it. Go sign your name. Guys can't get in the gear workout because whatever, or it's 106 degrees. Okay, got it, right? We don't want to tap ourselves out before we even start. So I got it. Go lift some weights. Go do some stuff. And then sign your name. Reading, on that note, it's if we all read the same thing, then that's great. But if we don't read the same thing, that's also great. I don't want, eight guys at my station to be thinking the exact same way. I don't need them to be thinking the exact same way. The beauty of the fire service is I've got eight different perspectives here. So you know this thing, you know this thing, you are really good at that thing, and I know this. And we look at this one problem and we've got all this encompassing thing, and then usually we've come up with a solution very well because we've got the perspective. So yeah, we like to read, work out, train, and same thing, 8 to 5. For me, I just got off probation as an engineer, so I am testing the waters with sitting in a recliner again at night. I haven't done it yet. That was a personal rule for me. It's not the department at all. It's me. I would agree. I would agree with you. 8 to 5 is a great rule. I actually have a question for you really quick, if that's
Yeah,
okay. I just thought about it. So, train of thought as far as probies, rookies, right? Old school thought is, I say old school respectfully. Old school thought is, you're first one awake, you're the last one to sleep, you're always doing this, you're always doing that, you have something regimented every single part of the day. What's your take on probies and rookies and what they should be doing and what their time frame should be and all that type of stuff? How do you treat you guys as rookies?
So I was brought up in what I call, like you said, respectively, the old school way of thinking. So, like, shut up, speak unless spoken to, always listening, ask questions at an appropriate time. Now it's a little different. So I look at rookies and newer firefighters coming in, I treat them differently because, like, I don't like that whole shut up unless you're spoken to. Like, to me, there's a time and a place, is what I tell them. But if you have a question, ask the question. Don't hold off, and then you hold off so long you forget what the question was, and it could have been a question that was very important, like awesome question to ask.
Yeah.
So I know some departments where if you are a rookie, man, like you're not able to eat with the guys. You eat by yourself. You're first, you're always washing dishes, flasty. I get it. There's like certain traditions that some departments uphold, but at the end of the day, too, like I feel like they're humans as well. If they went through a rookie school and academy and they've made it through and they're on the truck, they've proven themselves to that point. Now, when it comes to calls, then they have to prove, hey, like I can trust this person. I get that aspect. But for me, in my opinion, to have a rookie where they're doing all the grunt work as the rest of the guys are sitting down, to me, I don't like it. And that's just my personal opinion. If they're going to be cleaning toilets, we're all going to clean toilets. If the captain wants to jump in too, cool. If the captain doesn't want to, that's cool too. That is his or her rank of captain. They decide what they want to do. But to me, if everybody, captain or not, if everybody's doing chores around the house, that shows that group camaraderie, that gets that team atmosphere, that family, that when we're at the fire station together. Some may disagree, and that's fine. But I'm not a fan of you eat by yourself or sure, if they get up first, make some coffee. 'Cause like I'll be 100% honest. I don't know how to operate a coffee machine. I don't drink coffee. Like there I got my fireman last shift. What time was it? He had like 3 cups of coffee after 12. And I'm like, bro, for real? And he's like, yeah, I need coffee. And I'm like, gosh, all right, whatever. Respectfully, awesome to you. But I don't expect him to do all the grunt, like, no. And there's some guys that they enjoy that, and that's their pedestal of hierarchy. I personally don't like it.
Okay.
That's just me. If they sleep in, bro, like you never know what a person's going through. You know what I mean? Like, just because they're a rookie doesn't mean that they don't have a life outside of the fire department. But there are some departments, man, they will haze a rookie. Like, if they're not up first or they don't go to bed last, and I don't do all that shit. Like, that's just me. I was
Yeah.
brought up in a time where it was like that, and I told myself, I hated being treated like that, so I'm not going to do that to somebody. So what I do is my new firefighters, I tell them, hey, if there's something you want to go do, find me. We'll go out and do it. If I'm on the computer, which I'm on my computer a lot, just let me know and I'll tell you, hey, give me like 5 minutes or yeah, let's go do it now. But be willing to be open to go do something with them. Now, on the flip side, if they don't come to me for any sort of training, then in my mind, they're good. Hopefully you are good because when we go to training and you fuck up, I'm just going to give you that look. I'm not even going to say anything. I'm just going to give you that look and be like, good job. Like, so that's all I do. But I love the question, but that's my answer, man. I don't like treating rookies like shit. I personally don't like doing that.
We're very similar in that I think that the rookie is the least experienced guy on the job. So if you don't want to wash dishes as a senior guy because you're tired. How do you think the rookie feels?
That's right.
Because he's never done this before, or she. So, very similar. With my rookies, it's hey man, for the first couple months, like I'm with you literally all the time. Where I'm gonna show you what you need to learn. I'm gonna show you what we got to do. You've got your probie book, but also. Here's like the house dynamic. This is kind of where your role is. This is what you're looking to do. If the phone rings, hey, try to get there. I'm not gonna smoke you because you didn't get to the phone. Sometimes,
Right,
like literally, Cap
right.
has the phone right next to him in his office. Like, okay. The doorbell rings. Hey man, let's go. I'm gonna go with you because sometimes it's crazy world now. So I'm going with you, but we're gonna don't let me beat you to the doorbell, like a friendly like competition thing. But then my for me with my rookies, it's because we're 48s. Hey man, if you need to sleep in, be up at a reasonable time. There's no time. I don't care. If you are on the box as the rook and you got 12 runs last night, man, I don't expect you to be up until one. And that's okay with me. If you now, on the flip side of that, if you are the rookie on the ladder and you were up playing wee until 2 in the morning, that's not my problem.
That's
That's
right.
not a reasonable time. You decided to stay up doing something that wasn't productive. I'm fine with you doing something non-productive. It's after 5 o'clock. Yeah, you got it, man. Go ahead. Go for it. However, if I ask you where something is in a cabinet on my truck and you fail to be able to identify what's in that cabinet, if you're gonna be up till 2 and you don't know your truck, go outside. If you're not gonna be up because you're tired, awesome. Go get some rest, right? Like very similar, I think, to your approach. It's take care of yourself. You are the least experienced person here. So really, we should be picking up the slack
That's
as your
right.
senior guys to protect you, because when it comes down to it, you got to trust me. In fact, I don't have to trust the rookie near as much as that rookie has to trust me. I know he's not do I know he doesn't know what he's doing. I know that he's gonna freeze or be stuck in the OODA loop or just be like overwhelmed. I know that. I know that so well that I can account for that. He doesn't know what the heck is going on, right? I mean, we all remember our first fire. You show up, you probably tripped, you forgot something on the truck, and then you didn't know what was going on here. You've never seen this fire before, so you're just like, you're pretty much useless. Let's be honest. So at least in comparison to where we are now. So I have to trust my senior guys at Rook to be like, he's gonna tell me where to go. He knows what he's doing. He is not only accounting for his actions, but he's accounting for mine. Right. So yeah, sorry. I was just curious because
No, I love
it
it.
sounds like you're a bigger city, and I've heard some horror stories from other places. And I was also raised like first one up, last one to bed. You do all the chores by yourself while the rest of the guys are sitting in there kicked up on the recliner. And it's like, one, that doesn't build trust. That builds resentment. And two, like it can build trust eventually, but you have to be welcomed into the club. And then it just feels like a frat party. And how deep is that connection? Is that connection so deep that, dude, I'm willing to burn my jacket off to come grab you? Or is it, yeah, dude, gave it a solid effort. I tried really hard to come grab you, but it was really hot. And, I wasn't sure, right? Not saying that that would happen or that that's a deciding factor was if they decided to wash the tires with you or not, but it can play a factor. If my guy trusts me, if I show the guy that he lo that I that I can love him, he can love me. We're good. We're tight. Very professional, professional first and then family. He'll go to the lengths of hell for me because he'll know I'll do the same. So I just want to get your take on that because I don't really ask people that too often.
No, that's fine. I love the question. And, I will state too, I probably didn't state it earlier. Now, on the flip side too, you have some individuals that come in there that they don't want to do anything. It's like because they got to that point, they get assigned to a truck. It's like, well, I've already proven myself, so I don't have to do anything. Those are the ones that I'm like, all right, I'll just give you a quick little talk. Like, hey, listen, me being the rank I am, it don't mean shit. So you could take my words however you want to take it, but you need to do this, you need to do that. And if you want to take it, cool. And if not, all right, fine. Like if I'm mopping the floors by myself or cleaning the bathrooms myself, I'm gonna do it. It's fine. But just know, all right, I kind of see how you are. So the reciprocation we have towards each other is gonna be a little different compared to someone that actually comes in and does their job.
Yeah,
So
absolutely. I agree.
But like you said, I mean, dude, there are some departments, some stations where it's like, ooh, like you will have it tough your first year. You gotta have thick skin. And I get it. Some may see it as a rite of passage, whatever the case may be, but How are you really building that relationship? Because if that person ends up making it, like they might feel a certain way about that person. And then next you know, they've transferred out to go somewhere else because they're not feeling it.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's see here. Communication amongst the rank and file, man. To me, it's been my opinion and my views that when I've traveled, the most successful companies, organizations, departments, man, their communication's top-notch. And when I say that, firefighters always give, and I might ruffle some feathers here, or might people go like, really, what side is he on? But when it comes to like our chief administration, we give a lot of some of us give our chiefs shit for, well, why didn't you tell me this? Why didn't you tell me that? But I want people to understand there are certain things chief officers cannot tell firefighters. Like,
Yep.
that's just the way it is. And so a lot, a good number of dudes will gripe and like bitch and complain, like, well, they didn't tell me this. And it's like, well, if that involved you, would you want your personal information getting out to the rest of the department? No. I will say, though, on the flip side, there are certain things chief officers can communicate and I think should communicate, because when you communicate, you know what that kills? This is crazy, this concept here. It kills all that rumor bullshit where guys
Yeah.
are, instead of worrying about focusing on getting better at the job, they're focused on this hot topic because nobody's saying anything. So, what's your take on communication amongst the rank and file?
Well, excellent question. First off, communication is, in my opinion, the second most important trait to have in a firehouse. The first most important trait is trust. However, you can't have trust without communication. And I mean, we teach this. It's a communication must be important because they teach it at every single level of every single rank. Firefighter in rookie school learns how to talk on the radio, learns how to communicate. Engineers learn how to communicate. Firefighters learn how to talk on the radio. Officers have to take classes to learn how to communicate over the radio for command, right? So communication is very, very important. We can't do anything successfully without some level of communication. I also think that communication is not necessarily the most important communication is not necessarily the verbal communication that we have on a day-to-day basis. A lot of it is things that we communicate through our habits, and through our attitude. And it just goes back to building trust. I will use me as the example. I communicate, in my opinion, very clearly to my crew that we are going to show up to work, we're going to be professional, and we're going to show up and we're going to get our shit done. And then after our shit's done, I don't care.
All right.
I don't say that. I've never, that's a lie. I take that back. I've said that once to my newest rookie. I gave him a letter to the rookie, kind of welcomed him to the family kind of thing. And that was my expectation. Look, man, this is what we do. This is why. This is how. And then I've never had to say it again. And not verbally, at least. But what do I do when I show up, right? Most of the time, I'm showing up early. I say most of the time, this is also a communication thing, right? Most of the time, I'm there about 7:30. Shift starts at 8. I'm there at 7:30, and when I say there, I've pulled in my truck. My gear is off of my rack, at least staged next to the apparatus. It's not hung on the apparatus yet because that guy has I haven't gotten pass on yet, but I'm ready to go. My if we got the whole apartment complex, the whole town's on fire, I could get dressed in civilian clothes and go. So that's my showing up early, right? I'm ready to go. I never tell anybody. We know we can see it. I know when people show up. People know when I show up, right? It's always visible. And then truck checks. It's in truck checks, right? I could sit and BS with the offgoing crew, until 8:30, 9. I've seen guys do it. I think there can be value in that if that's what you want to invest in, is getting those morning conversations, then great. But for me, my attitude is no, we're professional first. The first thing that has to be ready is the truck. So I'm gonna go take care of the truck. Once the truck's done, dude, if you happen to take a late shower and you're holding over because you just didn't want to go home yet, you got to run errands, dude, I'll sit at the kitchen table with you and we'll talk for a couple hours if you want, but my truck has to be ready to go first. So my communication is a lot of nonverbal stuff, right? Habits that I've formed, my guys know. It's the truck, and then hey, we're figuring out training first thing. I have a plan coming into work. I think about it the night before. I set it up. I get it ready. It's cool with my captain. I don't want to say he's hands off because that gives a negative connotation to him. He's not. He's very, very involved, very hands on. However, we've built the trust with each other that he doesn't have to tell me what to train. He doesn't have to tell not just me, our shift. He doesn't have to tell our crew, right? He will never have to ask and has not had to ask since for a couple of years now. He doesn't have to ask, hey, what are we doing for training today, guys? Hey, what are you reading today, guys? We have already established, we've communicated to him that we take this shit seriously. We have a plan. We know what we want to train. We know what we need to train, because we hold each other accountable with another bullet point of communication, right? So we do all of that ourselves without having that like overseer of this dictator being like, you shall train this today. Every now and again, we have to do that because there are certain metrics we have to hit, right? We haven't covered RIT this year. We have to do RIT today because we got to go over it, make sure everybody's still on the same page. Hey, Roger that. But most of the time, it's self-paced. The last piece of communication that I think people say they like, but they hardly ever do, is accountability.
Facts.
Everybody says they like accountability, man. And I've heard it from guys I work with. And I'll ruffle the feathers. I've already ruffled feathers once with talking on one of these things. So I'm gonna ruffle feathers again, and I don't care this time. You can't tell me you like accountability and you want to be held accountable. And when I come to you with a problem, or my buddy comes with you, my junior firefighter comes to you, he has the guts to come to you as a senior guy and be like, look, dude, here's an issue. Here's a solution. What can we do about it? Even if it's not this solution, what can we do about it? And then you blow him off, or you talk shit on your shift, or whatever, right? That's not accountability, man. You don't like accountability. You want to be comfortable. And you want the accountability of we went out, we did our call, and we came home, and that's it. That's your accountability. You don't want to be held accountable because accountability to me, I came from the Army. And granted, I have to take this with a grain of salt. About 50% of my shift is vets. So we all talk the same way. But you come to C shift, man, and it's really cool for some, in my opinion, for people who have never been around us to see this. Everybody is open, right? C shift is a very safe space. The reason C shift is a very safe space is because that space is dangerous, right? If I go out, and I'm an engineer, I'm a promoted guy. My captain can go out. If I go out and I do a mundane mistake, of I put the chain on backwards on the chainsaw. Happens all the time, right? Oversight. Oh, dude, I messed it up. You know how much crap I'm gonna catch from my junior guy? Because he's gonna catch it, first of all. He's gonna come around, look at that chainsaw, be like, that's not right. Fix it. Come look at me and be like, did you put the chain on? Like, absolutely. He's like, well, you're a dumbass. You put it on backwards. And I'll be like, ah, right. So that's from my rookie who old school, right? Don't speak until spoken to. No, that guy can come hold me accountable. I want him to come tell me, hey, man, you messed up. This is what I did to fix it. The reason that that's so important to me is because I can't take you to career fires every day. I can't take you to the fires every day. I can't take you to shootings every day. I can't take you to these hard, complex extrications that don't happen very often. I can't take you to that all the time. But what I can do is I can see this pattern that you've built. You've shown me every single day something is different, right? You said you saw this chain was on backwards today and you told me. You saw that the pin for the waterway on the ladder. It wasn't pinned to rescue mode. It was pinned halfway, or something was wrong. You fixed it, and then you came and told me about it, and you asked me about it, and you held me accountable for it. I trust you. It's 1% pressure 100% of the time. I trust you millennia more than I trust the guy who I took to a career fire once. He happened to do the right thing. Is that a fluke? I don't know. I've only had one experience with that guy. But my rookie, I've had 1,000 experiences and it's been right every single time. So accountability is another flash term. It's like this shiny thing. Everyone loves to hear about it. Oh, it's so great. No, dude, that's it. That sucks. Accountability sucks because most of the time it looks like 2 or 3 in the morning. You just made a mistake, and anybody from any level is sitting there in front of you being like, why? Right? And you have to answer to it. You have to own it. That's what accountability looks like to me. It's brutal. It sucks. There's no emotions. Like, you didn't do it right. Now, of course, there's a balance. I think accountability can go both ways, and you have to be accountable for success too. I'm not very good at this. Neither is my captain, and a lot of my guys on my shift are not this way either, right? I don't want to hear you say, "Good job, you did great." I don't want to hear that, man. I did my job. I did my fucking job. Like, you expect me to succeed, right? But as much as I hate to say it, it is important. We are humans. Sometimes a pat on the back goes really, really, really far. And even for an old, crusty dude that doesn't want to hear anybody talk about anything nice to him and all that, you know those people. He doesn't want to hear it at all. But sometimes, dude, over a cup of coffee, you sit down and be like, "Dude, you crushed it today. Nice." That's all it takes. And that has just increased his time on the job, or his attitude. Now he sees that, oh shit, somebody saw. Not only did somebody see, but someone was willing to be hold themselves accountable and actually come to me and say, "Hey, good job." Yeah, accountability can be painful. But through discomfort we grow, right? So you're muted, by the
Oh, sorry about that.
way. No, you're good.
Accountability isn't always comfortable either. Like you said, people preach accountability until it's them that's being held accountable. So, like for me, I am always transparent. I tell people I don't know everything. I'm gonna make mistakes. I work every day to try to improve myself. That is holding myself accountable. But I know if I mess up, whatever consequences happens, and I'm gonna face it. Like I'm gonna own up to it because nobody's perfect. Like there's not anybody out there in this world that's perfect. But it's one of those, like it's that buzzword. Everybody wants to, oh, well, this person needs to be held accountable. You're absolutely right. But so if one person's held accountable, everybody's gonna be held accountable to me to the same standard. So if I mess up, I'm gonna own it. If that includes paperwork, me a write-up, it's fine. Like I messed up. I'm going to, but you have individuals who want that until it's like, hey, I need you to sign this paper. Then it's like, well, what, and then it's like, well, such and such. So it's, yeah, either way. I love your answer on it.
I have a funny example, just for people that are more like visual, or I guess this would be audible learners, too, right? And it's me. I'm gonna die myself out here. It was a mistake I made. I got promoted. I've been a engineer for 4 hours. Okay, first shift as an engineer, baby. Woo! The badge is still hot, right? Fresh off the press. Toned out for a reported structure fire. And we're going normal. I've done this tons of times, right? I've gone to this same road, done this same thing, man. But I'm an engineer now, so everything's different, right? Make the turn on the road. BCSO is blocking the address like every single time, right? They do this every single time. Sheriff's office blocks the driveway. Okay, well, I misjudged. It was a matter of about 2 inches. Driving a ladder truck, right? That's not that much miscalculation, but guess what? Made a miscalculation. So I kissed the bumper of the sheriff with my taillight. And I'd been talking with my cap, right? He's super excited. I just got promoted, all this stuff. Yeah. Awesome. We're riding a high. It was so tempting to just be like, not say a word, right? Obviously, people would notice, but I was like, man, I don't want to kill this vibe. However, looked at it in my mirror. I couldn't tell from the mirror. I looked at him, ends up being a trash can that was on fire next to the house. It wasn't an actual house fire. Look at him, and I was like, hey, it's close. I'll let you know. Right. So we have enough trust with each other. He knows that I'm actually going to let him know. Go out, look at it. Dude, I kissed it, man. I did no damage to the sheriff's department vehicle. I just popped the tail light on mine. Look at it. And like in my head, I'm like, dude, I'm demoted. It's a, I'm a worst case scenario type of guy. I was like, I'm demoted. They're probably going to fire me. They don't want to do demotions. They just want to fire me. I'm not capable of doing this job. Like, God damn it. Right. And here, but I still got to go tell Cap. And so I walk up to him, and this is my accountability. I was like, yeah, made contact. And then looked at me. I could tell he was very mad, but he was mostly disappointed, like a dad, right? But I know what I had to do. So told him, got it over with. Then I went, I handled the process, right? Called fleet, called PD, got all the report, got this while they're doing their stuff, right? I'm handling the pump too, but then I'm handling this too, so that when they're done, they show up and Cap's like, well, what do we need to do? I was like, oh, it's already done, right? Like, I've already taken care of everything. When we get back to the station, I'll take my truck, I'll go pee for your analysis, right? Make sure I'm do a drug test. We do that, it's mandatory. And I was like, any paperwork you got for me, I'll sign. Right? Like, I messed up. And it happened, right? I got a little verbal, and I say little, but we got a little verbal, and it was like, yo, can't be doing this. And we talk about it now, we joke about it now. Like, it couldn't wait very long before I had to do something wrong, right? And yeah, accountability can be very uncomfortable. I put a lot of trust in Cap. Like, I fucked up. Here you go, Cap. I fucked up. Lash me, do whatever you got to do. I'm at your mercy. And it turned out to be okay because we got that trust. It was I was held accountable, and it doesn't happen again.
I mean, if you drive any sort of apparatus, like, I mean, if you're lucky to say you've never tapped or hit anything, then congratulations. But statistically, it's going to happen. So, like how you mentioned it, I'll mention it. We had our ladder truck that we got now. We didn't even have it a week. We didn't even have it a week. And I am like, if anyone knows me, I'm particular about all vehicles. Like, I'm meticulous with mine, my wife's. The fire truck is also, to me, it's mine when I'm operating it. So it's clean, it's shiny, and all that. We are finishing up a great day of wrapping up, being done with hydrants. Bunch of kids, little kids were coming out. They were like, hey, waving and stuff. Man, I misjudged. I saw the mailbox on the right side, but I was focused on the kids and I got too close and I hit the mailbox, which bended it back, and it like put a deep scratch in the paint of the truck. Like, I'm talking
Oh, man.
brand new, not even a week, dude. We had this truck. So I hit it, my captain calls, and I'm disappointed. I sent an email directly to the fire chief. I'm like, hey, I'm truly sorry. This was not my intent. Anyone that knows me in apparatus knows, like, and my battalion chief found out and he was like, dude, stuff's gonna happen. He's like, yeah, does it suck? Does it sting? Yeah. But you know what? And his words were, hey, you already got something, or the new truck already got a ding and you did it. Like, it's over with. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying who cares, but it's to the point of it's gonna happen. And so, like, I told my cap, I said, hey, and I told my battalion chief, if I need to sign paperwork, I'll sign it. Like, I did it. I'm not blaming fingers. I'm not gonna point and say, well, it's because of this and that. No, I was operating the truck and I did it. But what I want people to understand is things are gonna happen. You gotta be man or woman enough to admit when it's your fault, it's your fault. Move on and learn from it.
And what happens? There's two things. One that is obvious, and one that I don't think people would think of right away. If you didn't say anything, because I very well could have been like, nah, it was fine. But two things happen. One, they're going to find out. And rather than get a little verbal and like a talking to, and then don't do that again, I'm probably getting fired. I lied. I'm getting fired, and I'm not hireable anywhere else because they're not going to hire somebody that's going to lie, right? That's worst case. Honestly, that's probably best case. But let's say that they don't fire me, but they give me a hard paperwork, hard write up. It's like for sure, letter of reprimand, whatever, right? That's oh, a lot of people will think that's the worst case scenario. I get fired or I get a letter of reprimand. The problem is that's not the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is the other thing that's going to happen at the same time. Every single person in your department knows that you're not going to tell the truth. And now I can't trust you for shit. Did you take the trash out? Oh yeah. Gonna go check that. Did you do this? Absolutely. Gonna go check that. Did you fill my bottle all the way up? Yep. I don't trust you for anything, man. I can't trust you anymore. You lied about hitting a cop car. Come on, man. That's one of those things that's bound to happen. Okay. Well, if you're gonna tell me a lie about something that's bound to happen, what are you gonna tell me about something that's completely preventable? Or that threatens my life, or not even my life, my buddy's life, right? Like, did you check the med bag? Is the IV pump fully charged? Did you check the AED? Did you check the monitor? Did you check the, you know? So the first offense or the first consequence is, oh, I got written up, and people think that's the worst thing in the whole entire world. And yeah, it sucks. I've been written up before, man. Not in the fire service, actually, ironically. I've been written up before, though. It's not the worst thing that happens. The worst thing that happens is after you do that, if you did it because if you got written up because you lied, nobody trusts you anymore. And nobody will ever trust you again to the level of where you were at. They'll never be able to. And that sucks because now you can't do your job.
That's a fact. Love it. I love it. My last question, or almost my last question, wellness and truly being there for one another. You mentioned that key word earlier, which I was like, yeah, 100% right. Brotherhood. You know, you hear that term a lot, until some shit goes down and you think your brothers have your back and you turn around and there ain't none to be found. So what does wellness and truly being there mean to you?
Yes, excellent question. So I think that's an it's an ever-changing definition for me, first. Second, I want to touch on the brotherhood thing right before I forget, because I'll forget. Brotherhood is important except for the until the fact you realize that none of these guys are going to pay your bills. And that's not a dig at anybody else. Listen, bro, I love my department. I love my captain. I love my backseat guys. I love everybody, especially on my shift. I truly, genuinely have a deep love and respect for my guys, all of them, which is very rare. But I truly care about these guys. But I can tell you one thing that I cannot and will not do for them, and that is I will not pay their bills for them. So, brotherhood, right? We use it as, oh, you're a bro and all this other stuff. Okay, that's really great, but brotherhood doesn't mean that I'm going to instantly drop everything or that I'm going to support your bad decisions, right? I'm not going to do that. If you ask me to betray my morals and my ethics on your behalf because you think I'm a brother, wrong. I'm going to be a brother and I'm going to call you out, or I will go tell someone. Like, what? You know, like, you're doing cocaine on the side, man. And you come ask me and you're like, hey, can you help me out? Like, now you say, I'm doing cocaine on the side. I'm going to rehab. I need help. I need a place to crash. Can I stay at your house? You control the substances that come in here. I've already told Chief, I've already done this. I'm going to get help. Brother, my couch is literally a pull-out couch, as you can see. Come on. Yes. Come over here, dude. I'll cook for you. My wife will cook for you. Like we got you, but you say nothing, and I know you're on cocaine, and then you're like, hey, can I come crash at your house? But you just want me to help you out because you want to get away from something. You're not gonna tell Chief. No, man, I can't do that. I can't do that for you. Right? I wouldn't love you if I did that for you. I would be it's aiding you in that. So that's the little thing about brotherhood. Brotherhood is not high fives, smacks on the back. Yeah, good job, bro. That's not what that means. Brotherhood means I will do the right thing for you and by you so that someday, if I meet you in the afterlife, I can look you in the eyes or whatever. You know, I don't know what the afterlife is going to be like, but I can look you face to face and be like, look, man, I did the right thing for you. And yeah, it sucked. You hated me for the rest of our life, but here we are. Here we are, and I did the right thing for you. So that to me is what brotherhood means. As far as wellness and being there, right? I'm wearing a Neck Strong hoodie. And actually, ironically, a Neck Strong shirt. So Neck Strong is one of those things. They're awesome. This is not a Neck Strong like the plug or anything like that, but being there for your guys. They have a slogan. It's literally called Be There. When I talked to Preston, we were talking about one of the things that I try to do for my crews. We have a small city, so we know exactly what calls the other guys are going to. We hear it come out. If radio traffic sounds gnarly, we know about it, right? Our guys got toned out for a pediatric cardiac arrest the other day, 2 tours ago. And it was a 7-year-old, right? So, that sucks. Those are hard calls. I am going to show up if it was up to me. I'm gonna at least advocate to show up, right? We ended up not going this time, because we were talking to the lieutenant there, and he was like, "No, our guys are doing it. They're in the bay right now. They're vibing. It's okay." He's like, "I'll let you know if you need to come over here, or if we think it's a good idea." But typically we'll show up, right? When I had a 9-year-old that had it was a hanging, and we went. I canceled the engine. You came back, and our guys were there. We were in the bay. We didn't say a word about the call. We were just sitting around being with each other, and the power of just showing up. I like to say show up, right? It's if we don't want to talk about the fire service as an example, another example is telemarketers. How easy is it to say, "I'm fine, I don't want any of your stuff," to a telemarketer? Wow, it's incredibly easy. You just tell them, because they can't see you. There's no presence. It's a lot harder when that guy's standing in your doorway, right? I'm horrible at it. I can't tell him to go away to save my life unless I'm really actually busy. Well, it's the same thing with your guys, right? If I show up to the station, I'm not going to talk to you about the call, man. I don't need to hear the details. I don't need unless you need to tell me. I don't need to do anything except for what you're showing me you need me to do. So if that's hit a workout with you, okay, we're gonna hit a workout, man. If that's we're gonna go in the bay and smoke a cigar, okay, we're gonna smoke a cigar, dude. I'll go buy them right now. I'll buy them on the way over. If that's we're gonna sit in the bay and not talk, and I'm just gonna sit on the couch that's in the bay across from you, and I'm just gonna sit there, dude, and it's gonna be 2 a.m. in the morning, and we're both gonna be trying to stay awake, and that's fine. I'll do that. I don't care. Show up, right? Too often I've heard the attitude of like, "Oh, if they need me, they'll call." And we teach this to our guys in the fire service unintentionally through our tactics. No news reporting is good news, and if I need a resource, I'm going to call for it, right? If I need a second alarm, I'm going to call for it. If I need a second line in here, I'm going to call for it. Well, that teaches us inherently that if I need help, I'm going to call for it. The problem is, if you need help mentally, you're not going to call me. I know you're not. Statistically, you're not. The reason I say statistically is because how many people do we know that have shot themselves, killed themselves? A lot. And even if that's not the end result, you can end it, right? And that's a really shitty situation. But also, you can live the rest of your life not quite going to that step and still being absolutely miserable. And that's arguably a worse product because now you're around, but you're not here. You're gone, dude. Your brain's fried. Fuck the job. Forget the job for a minute. Who cares about the fire service when it comes to this? Respectfully, right? Hear me out the whole thing first. Forget the job, dude. The job's gonna go on with or without us. You got a family. You have friends. Even if you're a single guy, there is somebody in the world that cares about you, right? If you're living every single day because of job related or not, some stuff that has messed you up to the point where you've considered taking your life or you just don't care anymore. Man, you got to we got to figure out how to tap into that. And I know you're not going to call me. I know you're not going to call me because you don't. People don't call. We're lucky that people text in for the next rung stuff, right? Like, so yeah, being there is crucial. You can't tell me, you can tell me no in person, but I can see you. I know you.
Right.
I think this plays into accountability though too, as an officer especially, because ultimately, right? My captain knows this, and I know this. Every officer should know this, right? I can advocate for going to station two all I want as an engineer, but guess what doesn't happen if captain doesn't want it to happen? We don't go, right? Because ultimately, he's the officer. He could tell me no, and he could give me an order, and we say no, right? Now, sometimes it's not feasible, but the officer needs to know his crew, his shift, depending on the level of officer, right? Obviously, a battalion chief needs to know more people. A lieutenant needs to know a fewer people than a battalion. But you need to know the people in your sphere of influence. And if you don't know them, respectfully, don't be surprised when some shit like this happens and you get caught blindsided. You gotta know your crew. You gotta know your guys. I mean, we know the calls that are gonna mess people up more likely than the other calls, right? So if they've had a couple of those calls or they've had one, and like if something changes in their performance, that's especially a battalion level, like that should be a cue. And walking that back a little bit, it's such a hard thing to quantify, right? Because not every time performance is going to change. That falls on your lieutenants, right? Going to these calls, you see your guy, he's performance is all the same, right? Your metrics are still being met. You're not getting second toned to calls, but you notice like your guy is just something's a little different, or he's burying himself in work. That was me. Just are always pos just check in with your guys, man, right? There's no one telltale sign. But being there, having these conversations with your guys, talking to them about the calls, asking them how it went. It's all, you have to know your people, right? Like I don't want to be asked how it went personally. It doesn't help me. Because you're gonna ask me how to go, and I'm gonna tell you the blunt answer, which is it fucking didn't, right? So that's not the way to get to me. The way to get to me is you just gotta sit next to me, man. We'll smoke a cigar, pipe, whatever, tobacco pipe, and we're just gonna relax, and we're gonna hang out. And if we talk about something else, then we talk about something else. If we don't talk about something else, then we don't. That's how you get to me. That's how you get to a lot of my guys. It's just sitting there, right? But you can't do that. You can't know when to do that if you're never there for your guys. I think that man, there's like a super big rabbit hole I could jump down real quick if you're cool with it.
Sure.
So there's a couple trains of thoughts for how the environment of a firehouse should be. Right. And neither one of them is incorrect. I'll put that out there first. Neither one of them is wrong. However, there are pros and cons to both. First is family first. We're very friendly. We're super cool place. Everybody's safe. Everybody's comfortable. It's a fun place to work. We get our stuff done. It's kind of more like a hangout spot. Like everything's cool. We still train. We still get our stuff done, right? Like everything's cool, but there's not a lot of that hard edge, like professionalism isn't first. We are professionals, but we're family first, including with each other, and then we are professionals when we go out on the street, correct? So that's number one. And there is beauty to that, right? If you can get a group of people to get along and mesh and vibe and be happy and they show up happy to work, dude, that's brilliant. That's really great. There's the other side too. And I think this site is a little more effective at identifying when problems happen before they become a real problem that you cannot reverse. And that's professional first. You are professional, and by product, or by in effect, your family, right? I know that the standard will be met. I know that we're going to talk about it. I know you're going to be accountable. I'm going to hold you accountable. You're going to hold me accountable. I'm constantly bettering myself. I'm making myself an image, not just for the public, but I'm making myself an image for the department and for, more importantly, for my buddy next to me. By doing all of that, I can trust you're going to do the same thing every single time. I know you're going to do your job. I know you're going to look out for me, which means that I meet all of the same traits that a family does. So I'm a very strong family by being professional too. If I'm professional first, then even if the family aspect of it fails, I'm still professional. I like that model. The reason I like that model is if I'm professional first and something happens to where it doesn't even have to be work related, and something happens that it's bothering you to the point where you're starting to crack. If you're family first, I can hide, man. If I'm comfortable in a place, I can just be okay in that place, and then when I go home, it haunts me. If I'm professional, which means I'm slightly uncomfortable when I'm at work because I always have to be growing or I'm learning or I'm being around dudes, that crack, that stress fracture that's really minute is amplified because I can see it, man. Like yesterday, you weren't nearly as eager to get out there. Like that's not you, man. That normally wouldn't show up if you don't go and you don't train like that all the time. So if you're half a step slower, it's not a big that's not a problem, right? You can be half step slower as the truck, but I'm gonna notice that because that's not normal. That's not my guy. My guy is boom, turned on, or yeah, he's a half step slower. And now all of a sudden he's awake all night. He normally sleeps in, dude. I know this guy. So to me that allows you to identify your people. It allows you to track their patterns. It allows you to see what normal operating is. And then when something changes, dude, are you what's going on? Talk to me. What's up? Hey, I saw you were, a little bit slow to the truck today. That's our thing. We pride ourselves. We turn out fast here. Like, what's up? And dude. Yeah, it's just been a really rough week. Would you like to talk about it? Would you not like to talk about it? You don't have to, whatever, right? But that opens the door. And I think that you're more efficient as a leader if you put yourself as professional first. You can be family. You can be a professional family. But it saves you from one, there's the gossip. It saves you from the trash talk. It saves you from bad habits. And in doing all of those things, it really magnifies when something is truly wrong. A small little change in direction is noticed significantly sooner versus the other way.
Love it. Love it. Great take on that, man. 100%. Thank you for being genuinely you on that topic.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
My last question I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
Oh man. Like dream.
Sure. I mean, aspirations, it could be fire service wise, it could be personal, but where would you like to see yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. First and foremost, as a successful father. He was a good father that taught three young boys how to be good men. And not just good men, but better men that I could ever hope to be. That is my number one. I have an ultimate responsibility to them. I owe that to them. As far as like my professional career, there's like two places that I would really love to end up if I could ever do it. And it may happen, it may never happen.
Right.
First, if I were to retire, I would love to retire if I could choose. I'd love to retire at a rescue company, like for example, Rescue 2 in New York. I would love to be the officer of a rescue company. I love rescue stuff. I'm a big nerd about it. I don't get to do a lot of it because we don't have a technical rescue team here. So that'd be number one, like ultimate dream goal. Like, holy crap, I ride a walk-in rescue, and that's just, dude, it's so crazy cool, right? 5-year-old me. If nothing changes, if I stay at Converse for the whole entire 20, rest of my years, which is very possible, I don't know. I'm not saying I'm leaving either, you know, I'm not sure.
Right,
And
right,
whatever happens with life,
right.
if I stay there, depending on the roles that come in, you know, in 15 years, we'll probably have battalion chiefs and a couple more stations. I think that if I were to stay in Converse, I would want to be either a lieutenant or a captain on the truck on the ladder 172, and hang it up there, man. Like, I don't want to be a chief. Of course, I said I don't want to be anything but a backseater for a long time. So, I don't want to be a chief. If I were to be a chief, I wouldn't want to go higher than battalion. But I think a super salty seasoned veteran captain on a ladder truck would be like pristine for me.
I love the answer. I love the answer because you were like, you want to be a great father first and foremost. And I think that's very important. I've said it in other interviews that I've had or in talking to other individuals. It's so easy to lose sight when you're into the job of the fire service with outside training, bettering yourself, things like that. And you kind of lose focus on what's really important because at the end of the day, like you said it, and I stand by it because I say it too. You are replaceable in this job. The organization, they're going to move on with or without you. That's a hard fact. You're there right now, you're filling a seat. Once you're done, somebody else is in that seat. Like you could die, and before your body's set, your replacement's there. It's not being mean. It's part of business. Fire department is a business. So I just want people to like, you know, there are some individuals that somehow maybe think that, well, this place is nothing without me. They will move on. Like
Tomorrow.
you're a cog in this, a little cog in this wheel. So like, don't get it twisted. This place, well, they've operated before you. It'll operate well after you.
Oh,
So
yeah.
if you can get that notion first in your head, then all right, cool, you're good. Like for me, yeah, I love my organization, but my organization doesn't define me. I define myself. So I love that you stated that you want to make sure that you're present, you're a father, you're a husband first. So and secondly, everybody has aspirations. So if that's your aspirations, man, awesome. Hopefully at some point Colony gets that heavy rescue going. Cool. If not, then you're on the ladder truck. But
Right.
I just want to genuinely say, first and foremost, man, thank you for coming on. Thank you for speaking 100% facts. I can see that the individuals you hang around with have definitely, and your upbringing have molded you in a certain way where I think you will go far with how your mind thinks and how you process things and how you view the fire service. So I just want to say thank you for accepting this invite coming on.
Well, thank you, first of all. I'm super happy to be here. I'm a nobody, right? And I'm just extremely humbled and flattered that you would give me an opportunity to come talk. And I'll be honest, man, it's not me. It's I believe these things, but I learned all this from guys that are way better than me and way smarter than me and just guys that are super turned on. And I just happen to be lucky enough to be in the spot where I can put all their information that they've changed my life with in a conversation with you. I'm not super smart. I'm not that guy. I'm not the fire guru. I happen to be very lucky and very blessed to be around guys that are turned on. And I'm lucky to learn from them. So I appreciate the opportunity to pass that on.
Definitely, man. You are a byproduct of your environment, of who you hang around with. So that's the best way I could see it, man. Because telling you, it's all about who you hang around with. If you hang around shit bags, you're eventually gonna be a shit bag. But if you hang around dudes that want to get better at the job, 99% of the time, you're gonna catch that infection and you're gonna just flourish. And I say 99 because you do have those 1% where they were around studs and they're just a shit bag. It is the way it is. But I don't see that with you, and I truly appreciate you coming on, man, talking shop.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.